Welcome to the Assembling Inclusion Podcast. On this show, we feature different programs, individuals, and initiatives focused on being more inclusive of individual needs. We invite you to learn right alongside us. If you want some additional resources or access to our courses, please visit our website or follow us on social media. But for right now, let's get right to the episode. Digital accessibility is an important topic of conversation as we spend most of our daily lives online in some capacity. However, the guidelines for accessible web design are often not followed. Some studies even suggest that as little as 3% of the internet is accessible to someone with a disability. In this episode, we're spotlighting this issue by showcasing Nobility. We interviewed Sharon Rush to discuss the importance of digital accessibility and common barriers that are experienced by people when working within a digital space. Nobility has a variety of programs, including Be a Digital Ally, that focus on making web content more accessible. They break down these guidelines into manageable chunks to really help people get started making the change and ensuring that the content they are sharing and posting is openly accessible to everyone. This episode provides a lot of insight not only into web accessibility, but also into the great work Nobility is doing to promote awareness of online barriers. If you want to learn more about how to make sure your own content is accessible, let's dive right in to learn more. Hello, and welcome back to the Assembly Inclusion Podcast. I'm here today with Sharon Rush, the founder and executive director of Nobility, and we're going to be talking a little bit about the organization in general, as well as their Be a Digital Ally program and digital accessibility overall, and just all of the work that they're doing over there. So Sharon, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Well, thank you, Katie, for having me.
So before we dive into digital accessibility, can you tell me a little bit about Nobility and what the organization does?
We're a nonprofit 501c3 organization. Nobility was founded in Austin, Texas in 1999. We exist to address the barriers to digital accessibility for people with disabilities, disabilities of all kinds. Our mission is to create an inclusive digital world for people with disabilities. We realize that that's a pretty huge goal, and it means that we really are working to change how the technology, the same technology that powers the modern world, is designed and delivered so that it becomes more inclusive of the needs of people with disabilities. We believe that technology platforms need to be just as easily navigated and understood by disabled people as by any other users, and we work toward that mission.
I think that's a really great mission, and it's something that is so important. And I was really looking to talk about digital accessibility, which is how I came across Nobility. I was trying to find something because that's such an important topic. I work in a school district right now, and with our website, they're working on making sure that it's digitally accessible, and you know, it's removing a lot of the things that aren't accessible. And it's just such an important topic of conversation. So I'm really excited to really dive into that with you. So I really wanted to focus on specifically the, because that's what I came across first, which was the Be a Digital Ally program. That was the first page I think I ever looked at when I looked at Nobility. I don't know what brought me there first, but can you talk to me about that program and what was the inspiration for starting that specifically within Nobility?
I'd love to talk about Be a Digital Ally, which, you know, we talk about it with its acronym BADA. So we call it our BADA program. And I'd say we have like three general ways that we address our mission. We create these community programs, of which BADA is one. And that's mainly meant to engage people in the issue and help people understand what digital accessibility even means and why it's important. We also provide formal training. We have an upcoming AccessU conference, which is more formal training that teaches practical skills to developers and designers and people with professional responsibility for building websites. And then we also provide direct consulting services to companies, schools, other institutions. And the purpose of those services is to help organizations integrate inclusive design thinking into their own development of digital products and services. But BADA in particular is a really great way to just introduce people to the topic. It's not a highly technical program. BADA is more of, it's an introduction for people who maybe they're not a developer or a designer or a project manager or a systems engineer or a programmer, but instead they have something to do with posting content, maybe through social media, or maybe they just upload content to the website. You mentioned the school that you work with. You know, a lot of people at the school are not developers or designers, but they are putting information on the web. Maybe they're posting documents. So we try to provide for that kind of a role, some tips and techniques that help them to understand how can you do these typical tasks in a way that is inclusive and that doesn't lock out people with disabilities from these very standard communication avenues that we're all taking for granted. I think the lockdown that we experienced during the pandemic was a great example of ways that we started doing absolutely everything, shopping online, going to work, going to school. And so as we think about how we use technology in the modern world, I think it's really important that all of us who invite people to meetings or send emails or post to social media understand at least some basics about what accessibility is. And that's what BADA is meant to do. Be a digital ally. Help people with disabilities be included.
I appreciate the fact that it's like an introductory experience, like you said, because I think a lot of times people look at like accessibility requirements digitally and they're like, I have no idea where to start and what to do. They want to do it, but they're like, it's so overwhelming. So I appreciate that it's really an introduction with some tips to just get started and bring awareness as people are doing that content creation and content posting. And eventually they can dive a little bit more in depth when they become comfortable. But at least it's getting the ideas out there to start off, as opposed to just people becoming overwhelmed and shutting down and being like, I can't figure that out. I think that's a really great way to approach it.
That is exactly it.
I did want to just bring up before we dive into like more of the logistics of the programming and what topics are being covered. I did want to talk about what are some of the biggest challenges that you think people with disabilities face when it comes to accessing digital content. I know there's a lot of variety and every disability is different and every person is different, but what do you think are some of the biggest challenges that are faced right now?
You know, that is an excellent observation that there are different kinds of disabilities. And as a result of that, there are different barriers that people experience depending on what their disabilities are. So when you're designing tech, I think you have to have at least a very basic understanding of how different disabilities are affected by different design choices. So I think probably the easiest one to understand for people is the barriers that are experienced by blind people. And in fact, when we started Nobility, which was 23 years ago, people would say, well, how can blind people even use the web? But the fact is that blind people use a technology called a screen reader that can take the printed information in a website and turn it into basically reading it out loud. And that technology has been widely adopted by other people because it's very convenient. But if you are entirely blind and you only are depending on what you listen to, then if text is presented as a graphic image rather than a text, the screen reader won't be able to translate it. Pictures, if there's a picture of something or a graph or a chart, when visual information is not explained or given a text equivalent, when it's only delivered as an image, then someone who's blind, their screen reader can't translate it, and they essentially have no access to that content or that information. It becomes inaccessible to them. People with low vision have a different challenge because they may need to magnify the content, the text, into a size that's big enough to be legible so that they can read it. So if the design does not allow the text to expand and reflow, that information will be lost to that type of reader. I think deaf users are one that's another easy one to understand. If you have a video or if you're on a Zoom conference or any kind of video conference with someone who's deaf and there are no captions, then that deaf person is not going to be able to participate. So captions become an accessibility affordance things like forms where we input, those need to be labeled. They need to be keyboard accessible. People who have mobility impairments, they may not use the mouse at all. So if you're just using a keyboard or the tab key, you have to make sure that all those content elements are programmed in a way that you can get to them with the keyboard only, without a mouse. There are barriers involved with touch screens for people who are mobility impaired. For people with cognitive disabilities, you want to be sure that you are not using language that is super complex. You want to make sure the navigation is very clear and that the navigation patterns are consistent throughout. There are just so many things that you can understand about how people with disabilities use the web. Flashing and moving content, for example, can be a distraction for someone who has an epilepsy disorder or ADHD. Different groups of people have different reasons why certain things are terribly accessible. So what happens as people learn about this issue is that, as you mentioned, they often quickly feel like overwhelmed, like, oh no, this is too much. This is too much. I can't manage all this. And while I understand that that list is long, most of these issues are not that difficult to address. So if you become aware of it and you have a commitment to ensuring access for this broad group of people, then you learn how to integrate accessibility features into different products or services or communications that you're doing as you create them. And then it's not like you have to go back and then put all this accessibility in. It's that it just becomes part of your process of making things. And that's what we try to do with BADA. You know, we want to provide clarity around one of these issues at a time, you know, break it down a little bit, provide free solutions that exist for many of them, and invite people to implement them as they post videos or social media content or more information to the web or applications or other digital communications.
I think that's a great point about doing it as you go, as opposed to doing it on the back end when something is designed and finished, because then it feels like part of the process authentically, as opposed to something else you have to go back in and do. The captioning is always huge. I'm a big captions user. I don't have a hearing impairment in any way. It's just like, that's just how I connect better. Like even now, I have my closed captioning on because it helps me with conversation and like picking up on information. So that's something I always try to go in and do. But some people are like, I forgot about the captions entirely when I was doing a video. And it's like, okay, well now you can go back and make sure the captions are accurate. That's one of my like pet peeves, that people are like, oh, the transcript is there. And I'm like, but the transcript is wrong. And like, if you're doing an online course, and I've come across it, online courses that I'm like, I have the closed captioning on, I'm looking at the transcript to go back and review. And I'm like, that's not even the right information. And like, this is the information you need. Like, it has to be correct. So I appreciate the breaking down of it to the point where it's like, okay, you're thinking about it as you're going through and not just like tacking it on later as you go through like those different webinars and modules that are going with the Be a Digital Ally program.
You know, I love the fact that you said, I don't have a disability, but I use this disability affordance, because I think that is an excellent point, and it helps people to understand that. All right, here's an example. When you're in the nonprofit world, like we are, you get invited to a ton of how to make your nonprofit do this better or that better, or write grants or reach a better public, webinars often. And so I was invited to one, and I wrote and said, well, will you have captions? And they wrote back and said, no, no captions. We've never had a request for it. Deaf people don't come to our webinars. And I thought, well, deaf people don't come to your webinars because there are no captions. And also that assumption that only deaf people would use the captions. So I went to the webinar anyway, I signed up. And then when I got there, I said, can you please turn on the captions for me? And that was a little bit unfair of me, because I already knew they were going to say no. But in the chat, I said, please turn on the captions for me. And, you know, then they wrote back in the private chat, no, sorry, we don't have captions. And are you deaf? And I wrote back and said, no, but it helps me to follow the conversation And it helps me not to be distracted. And that's the truth. I mean, these days when things are so distracting, to have those, you're following along with the captions and you're listening, and it helps keep you grounded, I think. For some people like me, I think maybe I have an attention deficit disorder. I've never been diagnosed, but I wouldn't be surprised. We may all have one these days. But I just think that was such a good point that you made, that you don't know who might use these things that you make available until you make them available. And I think this last study I saw said something like 80% of people who use captions are not deaf. They use them for other reasons. And think about where you might be in a noisy environment, or you left your earbuds at home and you just need to be able to follow on the screen. Those kinds of things are very, very helpful.
Oh yeah, definitely. I was a special ed teacher before I transitioned into technology, and all of my students were using those types of, you know, accommodations, and they weren't necessarily visually impaired or hearing impaired, but they had a specific learning disability, and all of those things were helping them. Even the alt text, some of them would turn on the screen reader so it would read like the graph to them, because it helped them to hear the graph being explained. Even though they could see the graph, they needed that understanding of what they were actually looking at. And so that helped them. So I think that's a great point. Like, it's not just for a specific disability, but overall, there's a lot of different people and disabilities who are using some of these accommodations.
Katie, that is such a great point, because people learn so differently. And to have, you know, an augmented experience where, yes, I can see it, but I appreciate hearing it too, or just all the different ways that people process and actually learn information, to give them enough choices to do that.
It's definitely beneficial to have those options for a variety of learners. I know you had gone over some of the examples of different challenges that people experience and how to make some of those changes to make things accessible. What do you think are some of the most important things people need to consider when trying to make their websites or digital contents more accessible?
I mean, we talked about alternative text for images. I think that's one that is easy to understand and relatively easy to do, just to make sure that if you have a picture, either have a description on the page as a caption or put the alt text into the code. Most social media platforms now do have that ability. You just have to be aware of it and make sure you put alt text in when you have image content. We talked about captions. Those are really important when you have any kind of audio content. I think also one that is often overlooked is the ability in HTML and most even Word documents, PDF, even PowerPoint slides, you have the ability to define the structure through headings and lists and things that are clearly defined, so that the information architecture, the way that the information relates to each other, is clear to someone, even if they're not looking at it. So often we'll make divisions in sections of a paper or a piece of content by making some subtitle bigger and bolder. And there are ways that you can do that, and it's defined as a heading. So then, just as a sighted user might go through and look at all the big bold titles and see which part of this document am I interested in just by reading those section titles. Well, if you define it as a heading, heading level 1, 2, 3, then the blind user can also just use that, using their screen reading capabilities, to navigate more efficiently and not have to listen. I mean, if you think about listening to every single word on a web page rather than quickly browsing and finding out what it is you're interested in. So I think that's a very important thing. If you have input forms or surveys where you're trying to get feedback from your visitors, make sure that those forms are properly labeled so that someone who's not looking at it or seeing it will be able to know, what are they asking me for in this form label? So there are ways to make sure that that happens that are pretty easy to understand once you know that that capability is there. So I think structure, other ways to look at, flexibility is important. Like I mentioned, the fact that people with low vision may blow up the words. So you want to make sure that they reflow well so that you don't have to do a whole lot of scrolling. But, you know, I think mostly it's just considering the experience of your visitors and will they be able to understand and navigate with the methods that they choose. It's like making a website flexible for mobile use. When we started using the mobile phones on the web, people who had thought about accessibility in advance were ahead of the game because their websites were meant to be responsive to the needs of the user. And that's an important consideration.
I think that's really, really solid advice for people who are looking to get started. So you had mentioned that you kind of break up the topics into, you know, smaller, more bite-sized, manageable pieces when you do the webinars through Be a Digital Ally. But what are some of the topics that you've done in the past? And then what are some that are coming up?
Oh, yeah, that's a great question. Well, we started with the basics of things like images, forms, captions. What are they? Why are they important? How do you do them? And one of the feedback we got is, well, you talk about these screen readers. Can you show us how they work? So I think we've done one episode now of how people with disabilities access digital content by showing the assistive technology demo. And that was pretty successful, but we only got to cover a few. So we're going to do another one later this month. And then also people want to know, how do we get started as a company? And so we're going to do one on accessibility statements and how to develop policy, how to distribute that policy. And then also the advocates within the company are like, how do I take these ideas to my developers? So we're going to do one that helps them understand that. Usability testing, so you can see people with disabilities actually using public websites and the kind of feedback that you get if you do usability testing. I think another really important aspect of making sure that you have accessible technology within your organization is that the people who buy your technologies and who are in charge of purchasing understand it. So we're going to do a unit on that. Like, how do you choose technologies? What do you ask for? How do you build RFPs and requests for products that are accessible? And how do you monitor that? We've got social media, of course, everybody wants to know about how can we make our social media more accessible. So we're going to do a unit on that too. And, you know, if any of your listeners have ideas for what they'd like to know, we'd always love to hear that.
It does sound like you're very responsive to the needs of the people who are attending, which is really great. And, you know, shifting the focus of the topics to things that are applicable to the people who are directly in attendance. I love that you showed the screen reader, because I feel like that's a question I always get when I do a lot of teacher training. So it's mostly educators. And it's just like, okay, that's great. Like, what does it look like in practice? Like, how do I know that it works? I did this, you know, I did the headings. How do I know that it's okay? And so I appreciate the fact that you actually went through and showed, you know, this is what screen reader does. This is how they would navigate your website. And then the user testing, which is huge. I mean, that's not something we normally do. I mean, we're mostly, again, with teachers. So it's mostly like working with the students and troubleshooting from there. But like having people actually go in and test and see like firsthand, like what is the barrier that's being experienced? And then now going back and we're making those revisions. Those are really great topics for webinars.
Thank you.
So I did want to talk about the structure of the webinars. That's the education background I made that always likes to talk about what the webinars actually look like. I had read that they're like an hour and a half to 2 hours, right? Each webinar.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
And I had also saw that, so is it all like lecture based where a presenter is kind of facilitating the conversation, or is it more of like some direct instruction mixed with some practice? How do those sessions normally look?
Well, it really depends on the topic. For example, the assistive technology demos, there was not much participation. But with the alt text course and some of the others, we do try to give some practice. We start usually by providing context and background because these are free webinars. People show up for the first time and they haven't ever been to one before. So we kind of try to put this in context. Why does it matter? Why does it matter whether your website is accessible or not? And we remind people, you know, from a human rights perspective, there are legal requirements, of course, around equal access, but that's not so much in the spirit of nobility. We like to talk about the human rights. You know, we care about equality, diversity, inclusion. Well, I think disability is the most intersectional human condition you can find because it crosses all normal divisions of human experience. People are disabled who are rich, poor, black, white, other countries, gay, straight, all of those. You're going to find people with disabilities in all of those categories. And the numbers are kind of astounding to people. So we usually start by setting that context briefly and then talk some of the major barriers that are related to whatever we're going to talk about, if it's captioning or what are the barriers that we're trying to address. Then we explore the topic. And as you said, you know, it might be interactive if the topic leads to that kind of interaction, or it might be more of a demonstration or conversation, but we always provide resources and we try to find as many free materials as we can to share with people. And by the way, for your listeners right now, the Web Accessibility Initiative at the W3C, which the W3C makes all the standards for the web, and their Web Accessibility Initiative publishes many, many free resources about how to test, how to determine whether things are accessible or not, how to include people with disabilities in decision-making and planning for accessibility. So that's generally how we wrap up with the resources and next steps.
That makes sense. I appreciate the fact that not only are the webinars themselves free, but then on top of that, you're also sharing the additional follow-up and free opportunities. Anytime something is free and available, everybody's like, oh, great. Like, I'll try that out. Perfect. So I appreciate the fact that there's a focus on high quality and also openly accessible resources for people to follow up on after they've attended the webinar. That's really great. What's been the feedback so far? I know you've had participants who have asked for other topics and things like that. So clearly the feedback is positive, but I'm just curious, what's been some of the feedback from people who have attended the webinars in the past?
Well, most often are people who say, I didn't know this or that or the other thing about accessibility. You know, I didn't realize the barriers that people faced. Or sometimes it's like, my kid has a disability. I'm so glad to hear somebody talking about this, you know, because often these kinds of resources are behind paywalls. There are a lot of consultants and lawyers involved, and we definitely want this information to be out there like the air you breathe, because I think it's so important just for everyone who's using this technology to understand the breadth of the ways that people experience and use and rely on technology. So we get a lot of feedback in that way that says, I'm blind. It's great to hear you talking about it in this way. We also get a lot of questions about where can I learn more? And, as I mentioned, we try to give the resource list at the end of every program, but we also need to make sure that people know that there are places to take deep dives. So I mentioned our AccessU conference, that's every May. And then we also have another program called the Accessibility Internet Rally. That's very, very low cost. It's $25 for an entire team to participate. You get to be trained in accessibility with some very skilled and professional trainers. And in exchange, you agree to design an accessible website for a nonprofit organization. So when we tell people, well, if you really want to get hands-on experience, join the AIR competition, that happens in the fall of every year, they get sort of a double whammy, right? You learn about accessibility, you get a hands-on experience of building accessible property or accessible website or application. You get feedback on the work that you do from expert judges, and you get to work with a nonprofit organization in your community that is doing something that you believe in. So that's a real fun follow-up for us to offer people. Well, if you want to learn even more, come join the AIR program. So that was my shameless self-promotion, because it's so much fun and it really does give you that in-depth sort of opportunity to follow up.
I didn't even know about that program. I feel like maybe I did come across on the website, but it just slipped my mind to even ask about it. But that's really awesome. That's great. The community-based connection, because you're doing something for a nonprofit in your community, and that practice and feedback. I'm going to make sure I link to that in the show notes as well. And
oh, great. Great.
But that's really awesome. I did want to ask, so now more diving back into the digital accessibility overall, from your experiences, what do you think are the biggest misconceptions that people have about digital accessibility? And how are you working with Knowbility and Be a Digital Ally overall to overcome those misconceptions that people have?
You know, Katie, that's a really interesting question, because I find that there are misconceptions at both ends of the spectrum as people think about digital accessibility. Either what you mentioned earlier, that people start learning about it and then go, oh my gosh, this is really, really hard. I'm never going to be able to do it. It's going to be overwhelming and expensive, and forget it. I just can't do it. It's too hard. So I think there are serious misconceptions about that, because of the fact that if you understand the principles of inclusive design, and you start with the idea that you're going to be inclusive in building whatever it is you're building, it becomes much less difficult and much less expensive. But then there's this other way that people, and you know, advocates like me, I've probably done it too, especially in the early years, where you minimize the effort that it takes. And you say, oh, it's easy. It doesn't cost anything. It's easy, you know, just build it in and it doesn't cost anything at all. Well, that's not really quite true either. So I think people should understand that it's a serious commitment. You have to have some investment of resources, even if it's just the time to understand what the issues are. But it's not just easy, and it doesn't come to people for nothing. So I think it's important. I appreciated when you said about the difference between a transcript that has been proofread and corrected than just the transcript that comes out automatically. You know, you do have to give it some thought, but I think it's very much worth it when you understand that you're providing to people who are otherwise going to be locked out equal access to information and exchange.
That's always the big thing. And I agree, because I come at it from both sides a lot of times. I'm like, yes, everything needs to be accessible. And then I do the transcripts and I'm like, this is taking so much time. And it's like, every time I meet with somebody to talk about digital accessibility at a conference or in my work, and I'm like, I get it, because I am a one person show and the transcript takes me the longest out of everything. The editing isn't as long as, you know, the recording isn't long. It's the getting the transcript correct and grammatically correct, because the AI generated transcript is never correct. It's always breaking up sentences and it's choppy and it pulls the wrong word and you have to go back and listen to it. It is a time commitment, like you said, but then once you get the hang of it, I think it does get better. But at the beginning, I feel like I was always like, yes, it's great. Everybody should be doing this. And then I faced my first transcript for like my first couple of episodes. And I'm like, wow, this is taking a lot of time for me to do. But it's
well, it's a great thing to get volunteers to help with, by the way, because it's a great introduction for people who are interested in accessibility. That's one thing that we've found, is that when we go to edit the transcripts for BATA, it's something that volunteers are happy to do. So think about getting some volunteers, Katie.
That's not a bad option. You know, I should think about that. So I wanted to ask about, how do you think that Knowbility, or, you know, the BATA program, has helped to make a difference in the world?
You know, that is a very broad question. And it's a question that our funders ask us. Knowbility is a nonprofit organization. We often seek support out there in the wide wicked world. And people want to know, how many have you served? How many lives have you changed? How have you done? And given the nature of what we're doing, because we're trying to affect systemic change, it's kind of hard to say, well, there are a billion people with disabilities in the world, and we think we have fostered programs, conversations, trainings, understandings, collaborations that have made the web more accessible for those people. But it's difficult to say, you know, to point to a half a billion of them and say, see how their life has changed because of what we've done. But, you know, we get the anecdotal feedback from people, and BADA is one thing that gives us the ear to the public, because I think in terms of making a difference in the world, we do hear from the people. At the end of every one, we say, how did you do? Did you learn something? Was this useful? We get that evaluation data. And for the most part, it's been quite positive. People are glad that we're doing this and grateful for just opening that door a little bit and having a welcoming voice that says, don't feel overwhelmed. Don't feel like you're alone in this. Understand that you have allies, that all of us are going down this road together, and we're learning and teaching from each other. So I think that in general, we lower the barriers for people to feel like they can practice accessibility, and that we encourage that feeling of community around this issue, because it is a community issue. And so I think in that way, our hope certainly is that we've made a difference. And then in the great big way, I do believe that we have changed the conversation and made a big difference in terms of helping people to understand it, not just as a legal mandate, because legal mandates are, they're such an important part of the digital accessibility landscape, but they're not very much fun. And so to create programs like the Accessibility Internet Rally or AIR program, where it's a community celebration of accessibility, and to frame the issue in terms of civil rights and people's lives and their access to work and school. And I mean, I don't know if you attended any weddings during the pandemic, but I attended an online wedding, a couple of online funerals. We started doing social events through technology. So if you start to understand, and I think Nobility's programs and services do help people to understand that accessibility is a human right, and that we have to make sure that we are designing systems that include everyone. And we have to listen to the people with disabilities and what their needs are so that we can design systems in that responsive way. I think Nobility has contributed to that.
I think those are all really great points, and I can see through our conversation how Nobility has met all of those goals and achievements within the program. I really appreciate the fact that you're listening to the disability community, because obviously that's huge. But then on top of it, I think it's really nice that you've created this space for people who are new to accessibility, not to shame them for not doing it originally, like, oh, shame on you for not doing this the whole time, but set the context of, you're not doing it now, but here's why you should be, and here's how you can go about doing it in the future to make your website more accessible. I think that's a really nice approach to build that community, like you mentioned. Yes, the legal mandates are extremely important, but I agree, they're not usually the fun part. So I like that you're humanizing the legal requirements. Like, legally you should be doing this, but let's talk about why. Not because it's on a piece of paper and because you have to do it, but because there are real people who are benefiting from the fact that you are doing this accessibility work. So I really do appreciate that Nobility.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Katie.
And I want to end with, I always like to talk about the future. So what are some goals or some initiatives that Nobility has coming up in the future?
Well, our goal is huge. I mean, our goal is to change the way that technology is designed and delivered. So we're a very small organization. We like to say we're small but mighty. And most of the goals, most of our ambitions are collaborative, because we understand that Nobility cannot do this alone. And so we participate at the W3C, the World Wide Web Consortium. We participate on those standards making bodies. I co-chair the Education and Outreach Working Group. We tend to try to keep amplifying the voices of people with disabilities, because I just don't believe that any translation is as strong as the voice of lived experience. So we, recent program that we started is called Access Works, and we've recruited, I think it's getting close to 1,000 people now with disabilities of all kinds. And we contract with companies to make our database of users available as usability testers and to report, this is my experience on your website or with your application or with your learning platform or whatever. So those voices of people who use your technology are clearly delivered and easy for product makers to understand, because I don't think anyone deliberately sits down and says, let's lock out all the people with disabilities. So as you raise those voices, and really what we're trying to do is scale this effort of helping people all over the world in all kinds of walks of life to understand how technology can transform people's lives. I think it was March 4th, we lost a pioneering giant of an advocate. Her name was Judy Heumann, and she's sometimes called the mother of the Americans with Disabilities Act. And she once talked about the fact that, you know, for most people, technology makes things easier or more convenient. But for someone with a disability, technology can make things possible, things that were not possible before. But she said it's a huge responsibility, because if it's not made to be accessible, it can become an impossible thing to do. And that's something we must completely avoid. She was brilliant. And if your listeners haven't learned about Judy Heumann, they should watch the movie Crip Camp and learn about her adventures as a very young woman who had polio when she was a baby. And she used a wheelchair all of her life, but she was just brilliant and brave. And those are the voices we want everyone to be able to hear. And that's what we work toward.
I think that's a really great mission and a great point. And I really appreciate all the work you're doing to amplify the voices and just the nobleness of your goal in general of promoting the accessibility and making, like you had said, making things possible for people that may not have been otherwise. So I want to thank you so much, Sharon, for joining us today, for talking all about mobility and digital accessibility and the Be Digital Ally program and just all the great work being done over there. I really appreciate it. And everybody should check out the show notes, because I will make sure I link all of these programs and resources. So that way you could pop right in and check it out. Thank you so much, Sharon.
Oh, thank you, Katie. This was great. I really enjoyed talking to you, and thank you for putting the spotlight on this issue. It's so important and it does change people's lives. So thanks for having me. Thanks for what you do.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Assembling Inclusion Podcast. I hope the information in this episode taught you something new, gave you a new idea, or showcased a new perspective. If you liked the episode, feel free to leave us a review or comment. If you have a recommendation for an individual or an organization who would make a great guest, you can message us on Twitter or Instagram, or send us an email at assemblinginclusion@gmail.com. See you next time.